Hi, I'm Megan Michelson.
And I'm Mary Flo Ridley, and this is the Birds and Bees podcast.
Our hope is to equip and empower parents as we tackle this taboo topic together.
On this episode of the podcast, we are talking about the birds and bees and adoption. This conversation is absolutely near and dear to my heart because our first grandson, Jude, is adopted. Today, we have a special guest joining us to share her story of adoption and how she navigates the birds and bees conversations with her children.
Megan Croft. So this will be a little confusing with Megan and Megan today, but listen to the other Megan. That's who you want to listen to today. Megan Croft is a licensed marriage and family therapist in Nashville, and she is a wonderful mother to two adopted boys. And Megan and I kind of go way back. She and her husband, Stacy, were the youth leaders on my high school Florida trip.
Yes. And actually, my strongest memory of you back then was the time when we were on the Florida beach trip and you were out in the Gulf with all the boys, all the dudes throwing a football.
You were
that
cool
girl
out
there. No, this is such a great story. You're just so cool. And all of a sudden I'm watching from the shore because I was not one of the cool. I was not cool. I was the dudes. And all of a sudden your shoulder was just hanging. You had dislocated your shoulder out with all the boys catching the footballs. And my husband casually walked over and just kind of popped it into place. I just got to watch Stacy put your shoulder back in place. So that, and then you didn't miss a beat. You never stopped. So that's my first strong.
That is how we bonded.
That is.
We bonded at that moment to Stacy Megan Croft forever and ever and amen. And our paths have crossed a lot over the years afterwards.
They really have. So sweet.
I now think of her as like a really good friend who I never see. Mm.
That's right. We're both middle daughters. It's like, we've got this bond.
Yes, and we have lots of mutual friends. And anyway, so I feel like she's a friend. And I'm going to name her as a friend. That's it. But we are going to focus on Megan and her story to become a mother. And what we want to do in today's episode is talk about how the story of birds and bees and how explaining birds and bees can take on a different direction, a different approach and different words for adoptive families. So Megan, I'm going to hand it over to you. And I'd love for you to just start us off by telling us a little bit about your story.
Sure. First, I just want to thank y'all. I'm so thrilled to be here. I just love what the two of you are doing and what you're bringing. And it's so sweet and so fun to get to be a tiny part of that today with you guys. So thank you for having me. And you're so cute to want to know more about my story. As I was thinking about that, I thought, wow, it's quite a story. So I'll just begin by saying that Stacy and I have been married close to 22 years. And the majority of those years were years in very active pursuit of becoming parents and took a lot of different twists and turns. Where to begin? So about 2 years into that long, long process, I had no idea how long the process would be, but I can remember sitting with Stacy. It was a year to the day after we lost our first baby. And we were sitting here in Nashville. We'd just moved a year earlier. And I was at a place called Baja Burrito with my big sunglasses on the porch, eating my fish tacos. And I had tears streaming down my face behind my sunglasses. And I said to Stacy, there has to be more to me than someone who's just trying to become a mom. There just has to be more to me than this. Cause we had just at that point, a couple years in, you know, to all the fertility procedures and I had surgeries yet to come, exploratory ones ahead. We had IVF attempts coming up in the years to come that I didn't know yet. But even then I thought at Baja, I decided then and there, the only other thing I'd ever known in my heart that I wanted to be all my life, basically, besides being a mom, was also to become a therapist. And so it was that day after having taught and been an elementary school teacher in my 20s, that day at Baja Burrito, I decided to go back and get my master's. Wow. In the midst of so much grief already, not knowing at all how much time I was going to have ahead, but to pursue my master's and then ultimately to become a licensed therapist. And so through that pain and through those years of actively pursuing, I was also pursuing licensure and becoming a therapist. And I look back now, I think it's really rare to ever, sometimes through suffering, see really tangible gifts and blessings. And I look at that now and think, I would never have had that time otherwise. And of course, I didn't think that way in the moment, but I look back now and I'm just so grateful to have my practice too. And so then through the years, we had several miscarriages, several more. We had failed IVF attempts and lost two babies through that. And after that, it's like, you look up and the last time we met with our fertility specialist many years into the process, I remember we were thinking it was after our failed, we lost twins to IVF. And I remember sitting with the doctor and he had always just been so warm and so precious toward us. And I was like, well, do we want to try this again? Do we want to do IVF again? And I'll never forget, it was just like weeks after we'd lost our babies. And he pulled out a prescription note. And on that prescription notepad, he wrote something and slid it across his desk. And it was a name and phone number of an adoption agency. Wow. That was kind of his response. I think he was firing us because I was really reducing his statistics with all of my numbers and all my failed attempts. And it was his gracious, but at the time I wasn't there. I wasn't ready. Mm-hmm. And I remember taking that prescription note and then the elevator, precious Stacy standing next to me. I remember sliding down the elevator wall and just sobbing and just feeling like what is next? What's happening? And I remember I got in the car that day and put my hands on the steering wheel and my head on the steering wheel crying. And I just prayed that God would, if this is the plan, if we have exhausted everything, would he please move my heart from feeling like adoption was the second best plan for me to truly feeling like his very best, his first plan, the plan. And sure enough, it was over the course, really, I had no idea, obviously, but Jake had been conceived, my first son, which I'll tell you about, had been conceived just weeks after that prayer. Wow. I had no clue, but I think about then those 9 months of how God worked in my heart to move us toward adoption through different conversations, through lots of tears, through a lot of grief. And so long story short, through our connections in RUF and through people, by then we were over a decade into like around a decade of infertility. And so we were kind of like the couple known as like the infertile couple to all our precious friends. And they just, you know, everyone just so loving and so dear and so supportive. And so word of mouth, we learn about this little baby that's going to be born. Long story short, we are chosen. It's Jake. We got Jake in 2010 and he is now 11. And between the years of Jake and now Cole, who is going to be 6 very soon, he's counting down the sleeps till his birthday. we had actually 7 failed adoptions. So we got Jake, and through the years we're selected. Anytime we had opened ourselves up to an adoption process, we were selected, which is incredibly unusual and strange. A lot of private adoptions, and we walked through those processes with those women. It was like such an honor and a gift and also devastating. It just seemed like our hearts were trampled for so many years. And I was so exhausted. And we looked up and I just knew how much Jake would pray for a sibling and wanted a sibling. And over time, I just thought, I just don't know if I have it in me anymore. And that I could talk about for hours, but I won't. And long story, very short, after all those attempts, we just, you know how grief is funny. It moves you. It's like the sorrow you process, you metabolize that and it creates space for like one more step, one more thing. Mm-hmm. And I thought that sorrow had just washed over us for so many years. And it was like, I have room for one more try. And sure enough, I opened myself up to this agency, this private, very small agency. And we learned about this little baby and I just felt that nudge. I'd felt so many times before, this is our baby. I could just feel it. And I told Stacy when he came home, I was like, well, and I turned my phone around. I said, these are the birth parents. I'm like, I feel it in my soul. Mm-hmm. And we'd been there before, but anyway, it was Cole and he was due 5 days later. And I thought, this just feels like God is like, come on, like, can you do this for 5 more days? It's kind of what it felt like. I was like, I do, I can do it 5 more days. I can do this. And sure enough, we got our little Coley. And it's so funny when I tell that story, so many people are like, wow, it just happened so fast. And I'm like, yes, it was like 14 years
after waiting for 14 years.
That's right. Whatever it was. So it's just funny, but I can genuinely say now, all these years later, that I literally would do every bit of it again to get to these humans. So that's my story. That's part of it. And they're pretty awesome little dudes. They're pretty incredible. And I'm so grateful for their precious birth mothers, the biological mothers who were so brave enough and loving enough and powerful enough to make a choice that they did. I just can't tell you how grateful I am for who they are. So,
well, and those boys are lucky to have you for a mother. You have someone that strong and someone that also decided in my grief, I'm going to be a therapist and learn to help other people. So you've taught us a lot in this story.
That's so sweet.
And it's still being written and you're still learning a lot, I know. But as we take your story and then we apply it to how are you going to be talking to Jake and Nicole about the birds and the bees? What would you say is unique or challenging or even difficult about that? I'll just insert here really quickly while you think about that.
Sure.
That our daughter Jill, who has a son who's adopted, as I was saying earlier, she said, you know, Mom, you want to tie it up in a big bow and make it sound like a really happy story for them. But there's no doing that because you came into this situation with grief and they've come into this situation out of a loss also. So everyone's dealing with grief while they're dealing with the ideas of conception and birth. So she said, sometimes you just sit with them and you hold their hand and rub their little hand and you both cry a little bit. So it's very, you know, but it's also still telling them wonderful things about the beauty of the design of birth and conception. So anyway, but what, back to my question is, what is unique being a parent of adopted children or challenging or maybe even difficult in these conversations?
Well, I think you've hit it. You've hit the nail on the head. And Jill, of course, as an adoptive mom knows this. It's like, there is no way to tie the pretty bow. There is no way to make this painless. There just isn't. And so I think you have to begin by knowing that there's literally no adoption that I've ever known of. I don't think it's possible to have an adoption without loss and without pain and without grief. And the loss and pain and grief is so layered and so complex for everyone involved, like every single aspect, every person's separate experience, right? And those are feelings, I don't know about you, but when you feel loss and pain and grief, it's like, those aren't feelings that we love to run into. Those are feelings that we typically try to avoid, right?
Of course.
Kind of escape somehow. And there is no escaping, I hate to say to all of us adoptive mamas and fathers, for sure. I can actually remember, as it pertains to the birds and the bees, kind of feeling... not kind of, but feeling kind of, well, envious of my friends who don't have that issue. They can just be like, well, you know, mommy and daddy love each other so much and the whole seeds and eggs and those seeds and eggs just, you know, boom, here we go. And y'all's whole wonderful thing you're doing. And I can't look at my boys and say, you know, mommy and daddy love each other and our seed and our egg, daddy, you know, daddy's seed and mommy's egg and do the whole thing because mommy's seeds and daddy's eggs did not make this precious human that we're dealing with here. Right. And so that's just in and of itself, boom, like right there, that's painful for an adoptive mom and father to kind of make sense of that as they're thinking about their story. I gotta say, I am such a fan of y'all and your whole coming up with the family message that you talk about in your birds and bees training courses, because I feel like we've done the very similar thing with the adoption story with our kids and that we came up with kind of a really good little soundbite phrase that we use in our family about their adoption, which is just that God makes families in lots of different ways. And he made our family through the gift of adoption. And I can remember telling them that over, you know, when I was in their glider with them, rocking them as little dudes, it was like, I just began telling them how God made our family in this amazing way. And just through this gift of something called adoption. And that's such an abstract concept, right? And as we're talking today more about concrete things with the birds and the bees, it's becoming more concrete. So you start just really small with that. And over time, you're just building and building their story. And for so many years, you get to be the one as parents building that story, which reminds me of the first time I realized, and it hit me hard, which I knew, of course, it would, the day would come, but when someone else would speak into that story. And it was when Jake was actually in kindergarten, and he came home and like threw his backpack down and was just scowly faced and angry and just blue. And I was just like, what happened today, buddy? Did something happen at school? Mm-hmm. What was it? And it took a while to get it out of him. But here he is, 5 years old. And he had said that a little boy that day at school had told him that, oh, you're adopted. Well, being adopted means that you don't know who your real parents are. Oh. And exactly. My heart just, I was so shocked by it. It felt so intrusive. It was just kind of crushing, honestly, mm-hmm. to my soul. Mm-hmm. Honestly, my face got hot. It was like, oh my, and to see the pain it was causing in him and the confusion and the hurt. It's like, he looked so hurt and angry. And all the while I was feeling my own feelings and feeling that heat in my own body. It was just so painful. And that's just one of those examples of, you know, I think what adoptive parents are looking at when they're looking at the birds and bees, which that is the root of it. It's quote, the real parents. And what does that mean? And when you start getting specific about biology, it's like, you know, in a lot of ways, the world says those are the real parents, you mm-hmm. know? And so up to that point, I had been the only one telling him with my eyes, with my heart mm-hmm. behind it, you know? And I believe children learn who they are through the eyes of their parents, and they learn about the world through the eyes of their parents. And we all know, though, those aren't the only set of eyes that our kids get, right? And so all of a sudden, you can't control the universe and the world and how that story is handled. And it's our job now to respond to that and to give to our kids wherever they are. And I just remember Jake bawling, crying and saying, I think at the time I was trying to talk to him about it, but he wouldn't even have it at that moment. And he just kept saying, you can't tell me it's not true, mommy. You can't tell me it's not true. And I just want to say, side note, even telling that right now, it's like, you can't tell me it's not true, comma. Mommy, you know, it's like I am his mommy, but it's like, you can't tell me that's not true, mommy. Which is sweet actually for me to think that as I'm saying
that
it, because
that is sweet.
I want to offer that to all those mamas who might be listening, who are afraid of these kind of harder conversations. So, anyway,
that's such a good point. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think that biological issue is mm-hmm. kind of what's at the root of what's challenging for adoptive parents. And so if we can, you know, yeah, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say, I think, as an outsider in this conversation, I'm not an adoptive mom. And so I'm just listening and learning so much. And I think it's easy for an outsider to paint this picture of how beautiful it is and mm-hmm. how beautiful adoption is. And it is.
it is. Absolutely.
I mean,
is.
Hearing your story, even completely woven in with grief, it's an amazing, beautiful story of a million tiny details that worked out, but
the best story ever and the most heart-wrenching story ever and like glorious. It's all those things.
It's all those things.
Yeah.
And so I think it's important to remind parents, you know, I think so much of what we are trying to do at Birds and Bees and really as a culture, I feel like is trying to be more compassionate about where other people mm-hmm. are in their life. And so maybe I don't have adoptive kids, but like to be compassionate, like I don't ever want to offend somebody with my definition or answer or explanation by just focusing on how beautiful it is and not understanding in my heart, like that also comes with such heavy grief. And so I just was blown away listening to your story, even though I've followed it bits and pieces over the years, you know, as an outsider, but it's just amazing to hear that whole story, but just how there can equally be beauty and equally be grief.
Well, I don't know about y'all, but in my life and the lives of my clients and the life of my people I love in my world, you know, it's like, I don't think you ever really get true beauty without that pain mm-mm. that comes with it. So it's just an interesting thing. But I think the deal here is we so often want to, as parents, like avoid pain mm-hmm. and protect our children from pain and protect ourselves from pain. And we can't, nor should we. I just feel like, you know, we don't need to fix this. We just need to make sure they're not alone in this.
That's exactly right. I'm so glad you said that. Yes.
Just need to be safe and open. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yes.
Sitting in it. So I think, you know, y'all asked what we do is what you said. Like, what do parents do then? So it's like, here, we're kind of setting it up. And I remember, I think you asked me like, well, what do we do? How do the parents do this? And I think the first thing, we're talking a lot about pain, and yes, the beauty is all there too. But in terms of the birds and the bees and the things that make that difficult, what should we do as adoptive parents? And I think that the first answer is that we need to work with safe people in our lives to process your own pain first, to work with either a therapist, yourself as a parent, or good friends that are safe, or whoever your support people are, because we have to metabolize that pain with someone. Pain alone and injury, or, you know, sorrow alone gets doubled, and pain in the context of safe connection gets cut in half. And so as parents, it's really your job. It's like the whole mask on yourself on the airplane first. Mm-hmm. We can't give the kinds of things we're wanting to give to our children in these places, which in my opinion is to be able to hold the space for them. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember Winnicott is a wonderful old, you know, he was a psychologist and a pediatrician, and he has this concept of the good enough parent. And a good enough mama is someone who can kind of hold and tolerate the capacity for a child's feelings and their experience and all of that. So this is not do it perfectly. It's just, can you hold that? Can you hold that space for them? Which I think is going to be a really important part of this. So you can't give that space to your children if someone hasn't done that with you. In other words, if you haven't allowed people to sit with you in the pain of your story, of your adoption, or the journey of however you got to your children, because everyone's is so unique, yes, how in the world do you think you'll be able to hold the space for your child and their experience, mm-hmm, and their feelings about this? So it reminds me of a time I was actually driving in Dallas, you Dallas ladies. I lived there for a while, but I was visiting my in-laws, and I was just driving around, as those conversations often happen. And Jake was so little. Now he's in the front seat. He's so big with me, but he used to be in the back seat. And I hear this little thing out of nowhere, of course. And he's like, "Mommy, I wasn't always with you," just out of nowhere. I'm like, "Well, what do you mean? What do you mean?" And he's like, "I wasn't always with you." And he named his birth mother's name and said that he had been with her too. And I said, "Yes, you know, you're right. I wasn't always with you." And his face just fell. I could see in the rearview mirror just this slumped little face. And I said, "Well, how does that make you feel that you weren't always with me?" Mm-hmm. And he said, "Sad." And I was like, "I bet." I said, "Honestly, it makes me sad too." And I said, "But the crazy thing is, Jake," and then you can go back to seeds and eggs here, where it's like, God is so amazing in that this very moment in time that someone's seed and someone's egg had to come together and makes a very unique human. That is you. Literally, I literally could not have carried you in my body. Like, someone else had to do that so that we could have you." And I said, "But, you know, this made you uniquely you." And it's like, "But I wish too, I'm sad too, that there was a time that I wasn't with you." And it was like, we just kind of held that experience together and held it. But I remember the parts of me that wanted to be like, no, I was with you like the day you were born, which I was, but I wasn't, you know, it's like, I wasn't. And he's right. And it's amazing to me that something in him knows that and needs to speak it and needs me to be strong enough to hold that with him.
Right.
And I think it's so amazing. I mean, obviously I wish every mother, myself included, could be a licensed therapist. I mean, we could be as mothers.
Please, hold on. Oh, that is, my kids will, when they grow up, they're going to be like eye rolling if they ever hear this, because they'll be like, whatever. Let me say this. I am a licensed therapist, but I am also a struggling mama. And I'm also a mom who is like making sense of this as she goes too.
Right.
But maybe it helps, but it's just, you know, that's
more, we're all making sense as we go.
That's, but right. I think I'm just a mom like y'all too at the same time.
But to hear this, and our hope is that this Birds and Bees podcast can reach moms out there who feel alone in this. You know, there are so many adoptive families out there that may not have a counselor to go sit to and visit with, or deep friendships or close knit circles. To kind of what you said, is like, you have to put the oxygen mask on first. And you have to deal with your own grief and all the heavy emotions that come with adoption first, to make sure you can really hold space for those emotional conversations with our kids.
And those are things that are ongoing. Grief is ongoing. It's right. Not like, okay, you deal with this. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. I'll tell you more stories in this, you know, in our time together, I'm sure. And it's like, this is an ongoing thing. So you don't just kind of like, you know, mm-hmm. back to that pretty picture. I mean, we mm-hmm. got to continue to process that loss. And however that evolves over time for both your child, for you, you can't really anticipate that, right? It's kind of chaotic in that way.
But knowing that, don't you think, Megan, that knowing that I've got to take care of my pain first mm-hmm. is a real motivator to try to get as healthy as you can, or as you said, help process all that as soon and as healthy a way as you can, because you do want to be there for your child. And if you don't take care of that, then you're just reacting. And sometimes the reaction to what you hear from them, it brings up emotions that you need to have control over a little bit. Don't you
absolutely.
Think?
Absolutely. And I think that it's exciting. I think it's empowering to think, well, you know, I do have big, intense feelings about this and I wish I didn't, and, you know, but it's like, well, let's enter into that, mm-hmm. enter into that sorrow, enter into that pain. And a lot of times I believe feelings point us where we need to grow and what we need from, you know, in order to be able to hold that space. So a lot of times if it makes you feel anxious, if it makes you feel ashamed, if it makes you feel scared, if it's, you know, hurt, sorrowful, it's like, okay, well, there you go. That's what you take to your therapist, your safe places.
Yes.
And that's where you need to grow. And you know, you're just a fellow struggler like your child. Y'all have a lot of growing to do together, you mm-hmm. know?
Exactly.
All right.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I know.
I was going to say, you know, for parents listening, I like to kind of give people tangible takeaways in a way. And mm-hmm. obviously we will follow up with all the takeaways at the end.
We may have to do a part two to this, because almost laying the foundation for adoptive parents with this is almost these bigger categorical things. And the nitty gritty, like, how do you say this? What do you do? Mm-hmm. Might actually need to come in a part two.
Right.
if we ever do that.
and I think that's a great idea, because again, we just want to be able to empower parents that are adoptive families to be like, okay, this is, I'm not alone in this. I can walk through this. Here's a good idea. Here's what I could say. Here's Absolutely. What this might sound like. Maybe mm-hmm. this is what she said. This is what I can say to my family. Mm-hmm. So I think the biggest takeaway I've heard so far is just that this journey starts with yourself as a parent. Mm-hmm. In, you know, walking through your own grief and getting help or sharing that story and really sitting in that and being able to process that on your own or with your spouse, and being able, cause this, I mean, aren't we all as parents trying to separate our own baggage from our childhood or our mm-hmm. children's childhood? You know, that's when they're mad at something, isn't it? Just cause of what's going on in our own life. And, you know, so often it's just how we can separate. But I think that's such a great first step, is to really give parents the permission as adopted parents, you know, cause I think there's also, I'm sure, so many emotions tied into this of like, you're so grateful for the family you have and you went through so much to get there that you almost probably feel guilty feeling like grief. When really that's just not, you shouldn't feel guilty. It's just how you feel, right? It's
absolutely
it's so much
shouldn't
grief.
Feel guilty. Yeah, that's like a whole other podcast, but yes, it absolutely you should not feel guilty. That again, that's just pointing you where you need to grow. That's someone right. who might need to learn more about a separateness, autonomy. That's a whole other shebang.
That's a therapist podcast conversation.
That's an awesome one. I love it. That will just take us. I know y'all want, you know, that would take us a whole other direction.
I know, poor Megan. We're like opening up a can of worms and also
no,
being
it's
like,
a
okay,
wonderful can. I love
we can't talk forever.
These are all just so important things and such important things. And I think they deserve kind of their own space and time in a lot of ways, for sure.
And something we say a lot is just the discussion of seeds and eggs and how that is just a starting point for so many birds and bees conversations, right? And the reality is, biologically, all babies do come from seeds and eggs. Mm-hmm. And as parents, giving parents that language, the biological language of seeds and eggs, really helps them take a first step towards sharing their story. And that story looks different for every family. You know, like you said, I'm jealous of the families that just get to say, well, daddy's special seed and mommy's egg, you know, like, however you want to paint the beautiful picture and tie a bow on it. You know, that is some people's stories, but that's not so many family stories, you know, with adoption, obviously there is a seed and an egg, but like you said to Jake, I, you know, that seed and egg, I could have never made you. And I'm so grateful that we have
right.
you.
Yes.
And later on, I remember a conversation with him about seeds and eggs, just a practical thing. And we were talking about, he, of course, as he grew and developed more and became more curious, he's my curious one. He was like, so, I mean, how do the seeds get into the egg? Like, how does that happen? And of course, that was in front of Cole and little dude. I was just not quite ready for my little guy to hear all the deets yet. But I pulled Jake aside later and told him, you know, how the seed gets to the egg, and kind of did that whole thing. And I remember his look on his face. And it, so often, you know, a lot of times doesn't, all roads don't connect and lead back mm-hmm. to adoption, you know, but Jake said, wait a second. So like you and daddy, he kind of was at the age where that was like gross, like uh-huh. a gross concept yes. to him, yes, you know, sure. just, which is absolutely right. Cause he's right? just developmentally not there. It was totally mm-hmm. hilarious. Actually. He was like, what? Boys pull their pants down. So he had to, you know, he's like so curious.
Yes. Yes.
And then he said, so you and daddy didn't have to do that to have me. So, I mean, like, woof, like he felt like that was like, at least y'all
didn't have to do that.
And I just laughed. I was like, you know what, buddy? You are right. We didn't. It was just like, that was how, and I'd been so fearful of how that very moment would go with mm-hmm. him, which other things have been heartbreaking along the way. But that was when I anticipated being more difficult, and it actually ended up being hysterical. So it's yes. like, it just, you never know. You never know.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's one thing that we're kind of talking around, but I just wanted to know some of the things that he has asked. And like you said, you touched on it just a second ago, not all stories about the birds and the bees lead back to adoption. So even though some are kind of in the sphere of adoption, not all do. So what are some right. examples
I'd love,
of that?
Yes, yeah. That's so cool and so helpful, because I really also want to kind of give a breath of fresh air and relief to adoptive parents who are afraid that this is going to just, everything ties in, all roads lead to adoption. Mm-hmm. They just don't. And I would actually say the majority of the interactions I have regarding sex, sexuality, that topic overall mm-hmm. have really don't lead to adoption. And I mean, some examples of that, I can remember when Jake was in kindergarten and there was like a commercial on the TV, and there was a man and a woman getting super frisky, you know, for some TV show or movie that was on, whatever. And mm-hmm. I paused the TV kind of like, you know, like a little moment. Just so much information for Jake. We were watching like, you know, a football game or something. And he said, what, mommy, do those people just love each other too much? And it's like, there
sweet
it is.
Boy.
This beginning of, you know, him observing sex in the world and sexuality, and that precious conversation we got to have that followed. But it's like, that had nothing to do with his adoption whatsoever. Mm-hmm. That's just him mm-hmm. being a human in the universe and seeing how things go, you know?
Exactly.
And it's just, there's so much of that. And then I think about even just this year, as he's now, that was when he was 5 or 6. This year, we got this magazine. I live in Brentwood, Tennessee. And I got this magazine with Ryan Tannehill on the cover and his wife, who's this blonde bombshell. He's our quarterback for the Titans. Mm-hmm. And Jake saw the mail on the kitchen counter, and there's this gorgeous photo of this couple, you know, and he knew who Ryan Tannehill was, and he saw his wife, this blonde, gorgeous human. And Jake just looked at it and went, whoa, like hubba hubba, you know, like who is that? And at the time I was like, oh my gosh, like who is this preteen, not even a teenager yet? I'm like, what
he's
is happening
noticing.
In my house? And so I swung back in on that and said, you know how you noticed Ryan Tannehill's wife is so beautiful, and I noticed that I could tell you like appreciated how beautiful she was. And he goes, yeah. And I was like, I mean, it's kind of fun to watch you at 11. I said, you're noticing things. You're noticing people. You're noticing the opposite sex, different gender, blah, blah, blah. And actually he jumped on that word sex. And then we were mm-hmm. able to kind of talk about that a little more, almost like he didn't understand it in the context, just like the opposite sex. So mm-hmm. it's yes. just so cool to see those kinds of things happen so organically, like all the time along the way. And it's just, I feel like that's the majority of the experiences that I have, you know,
with just the perfect example. I'm sorry to interrupt, but
no,
that's like the perfect example of sort of the drip, drip, drip philosophy that we have of filling their sponge, just organic conversations. You didn't plan that out. You didn't rehearse it. You're just talking to your son, reacting in a really positive way with good information, good observations. And and he is coming back to you with questions. So you all are just on such a great path. Really,
well,
you're
so sweet. When I found y'all, I just cheered. I found y'all, you know, and saw what you were doing. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm doing it already. I'm so glad. They'd be so proud.
That's what I think. Just like hearing that story.
I'm a big believer in that. Yeah, go ahead.
No, sorry. I was just going to applaud you again, but like just to show, you know, that's a tiny example and it didn't take a lot of effort, but just a lot of forethought to be a proactive parent in that situation. Mm-hmm. You know, you could have heard your 11-year-old be like, whoa. In the hills, whatever. I don't know these people, but I'm gonna look her up after this. But anyways, you know, you could have, as a mom, you know, my boys are still young, to be like panic inside and be like, "Give me that magazine," You know, like you could have.
Hold on, let me pause there. That hits you. That is your first blush reaction. The first blush reaction is, "Oh God, no." Oh my gosh. I mean, my mom's going to die if she hears this. Oh my gosh. I'm going to tell a story on her. But when we had my nephew, who's now like an adult, he's in college now, but I remember we were bathing him when he was just the tiniest little dude and the first grandchild. So all eyes, so he does not lack for love. Right. And this was like 19 years ago and maybe whatever. And I remember we were giving him a bath and there was some like colander cup and he kept like knocking it down. And he said, this is so much information. I cannot believe I'm going on this direction, but
we talk about
he's like,
lot,
oh my gosh, look, he's like, my penis is growing. And it was like the little thing. And my mom literally took the colander and threw it in the trash and was like, that's done.
We can have no more of this.
I was visiting from Nashville and I looked at her and I go, well, I'm sure that'll be his last erection, Mom.
Yeah.
You know, good job. Way to get rid of that. It was just so funny. And I thought, well, what does that say about how she handled sex in my childhood? I can't even imagine, you know, trying to remember. But yes. So I think it is easy. So it just all these opportunities all the time and not to be afraid of them. You will get triggered. You will want to go, oh my gosh, cover the thing, hide, throw it away. She was completely dressed. She was just beautiful. She wasn't like she was scantily clad or anything. No. I mean, she's just a babe and he appreciated a babe. And it's like, you know, good for him. You know, he's growing up. It's fun.
But I think that's just such a reminder too, as parents, you know, to self-check. You know,
that's right.
It's, we have our initial reactions and those are all normal reactions. We're all dealing with our own issues.
Well, and they're
fears.
also your reptile brain reaction. Mm-hmm. They're very rarely your best, you know, they're not frontal lobe. You're not able to think, you're just reacting. And I don't know about y'all, but I don't want that to be who runs my life. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to kind of have more poise than that. Even if you feel that feeling again, feelings point us where we need to grow. Feel it. Be like, ooh, well, interesting. You're uncomfortable with that. Like notice your feeling and be bigger than your feeling is kind of what I'm trying to say.
That's a good takeaway.
I know. Right? I'm like, God, you're so good, Megan. Keep talking. Can I
we'll do it again. Y'all have me back and we can talk about actually how do you manage these feelings? Because that's a whole conversation in and of itself and a really important one. I feel like so many of the topics y'all talk about are about managing anxiety. So just have me back. We'll talk about that next time.
Done.
That's great.
I just want to say, Megan, I'm just so blown away by how, you know, I think it's just so impressive. And what we hope to give parents is tools to equip and empower them to be aware of their emotional reactions and gut reactions, but not necessarily parent from them. So much of these conversations bring out these reactions, these gut reactions of panic or anxiety or, and so to hear you in that example, you just shared to kind of have that reaction, but to instead of freaking out, kind of leaning into it and making it an intentional conversation with your son. So I just applaud that because I think that's wonderful.
Well, that's sweet.
And then you had mentioned earlier just how certain conversations can be triggering. You know, obviously all birds and bees conversations can trigger emotions as adults, but as an adoptive mom, what sort of conversations or questions can really be triggering for you?
That's so great. I'm so glad you're thinking about that because I do think it's fun and not that's so weird that I would think the other stuff. I think it's so fun. Like what we were just talking about with Ryan Tannehill's wife and all the, who I don't even know who she is, but anyway, those kinds of stories are kind of delightful. And maybe I feel a lot of freedom because they aren't connected necessarily to mm-hmm. the adoption stuff. But I think the things for adoptive parents, going back to that, that can be so triggering and upsetting is anything where you are going to have a very visceral, strong reaction, like the one I had with Cole coming home from kindergarten and saying, mm-hmm. it means you don't know who your real parents are. My face got hot. I mean, I had a strong mm-hmm. reaction mm-hmm. physically. That's where our bodies let us know first. That's like, yes. be again, the other podcast another day. But, you have a really strong reaction. And it's, I think the first thing I would want to give parents is to remember this, that everyone's story is separate here. You know, you are going to have a strong reaction. You have your story. You have then your child's story as it pertains to the adoption. Not to mention, you know, especially if you're newly an adoptive mom, making sense of the birth mothers, the biological mother's, you know, story as it pertains. But here it is. So I think the number one thing I want to give is to know y'all are all separate. Everyone's going to have their own separate thoughts, their own separate feelings, their own separate needs regarding this. And so if you can kind of go with that structure in mind, knowing, yes, we touch, we overlap at times, we connect at times in our stories like this, interweaving mm-hmm. like that, we're also very separate. And that is very freeing if you think about it, and also something to grieve. So yet another thing to grieve. And, mm-hmm. and what I'm talking about there is, you know, I'm thinking about a few months ago when Jake and I was putting Jake down to bed. And I think those bedtime conversations when the lights are out and it's quiet mm-hmm. are just some of the dearest.
You're not looking at each other. Yes.
No, you're yes. not looking at each other. And Jake just busted out. He was 10 and now he's 11, but he was 10 at the time. And he said, someone told him at school that day that he and Cole weren't really brothers. This is fourth grade. This is now from kindergarten, don't know who your real parents are, to fourth grade. Someone says, you know, you and your brother don't share DNA. And so you are not the same. You're not really brothers. And I mean, my face, my heart just fell to the earth, and he never saw my face because it was dark, thank goodness. And my eyes flooded with tears. And then his second thing he said was, and you are only 50% my mom because I didn't grow inside of you. So you're 50% my mom. Well, everything in me, it was like one of those days that I was just so taken off guard by it. And it was such sad information coming out of him. It was just so, and also, you know, these are quote facts. If you want to say, you know, yes, you're right. You know, you and Cole do not share DNA, but remember, I go back to our message that God makes families in so many ways, and adoption is complete and it is certain and it is sure and it is kept. And so it was one of those that I was tempted to try to talk Jake out of his feelings that night. I was tempted. My initial reaction was to convince him. Mm-hmm. No, I'm 100% your mom. Like, do you not know the hell I went through to get to you? Which of course, you know, he doesn't know in an appropriate way. He doesn't know all that I went through to get to him. So not that, because that's my story, right? Mm-hmm. He knows I worked hard to get to him. I've used language like that. Or we went through so much and we couldn't wait to find you. It was more, that's the way I talk about my story with him. He has no clue. And so when I think about how devastating that was to me that night and the tears that were silent, even when he fell asleep, I just was laying there with this human who I have loved with all of my fiber of my being. Mm-hmm. And he told me I'm 50% his mom. And by the end of the night, by the way, he said, well, maybe you're 98% my mom, which I thought, well, I guess I'll take that for
I'll take
now.
It. I'll take it.
I didn't say that, but I'll take it. the deal is, again, we cannot talk our kids. You want to talk them out of the feelings because it feels so bad to us to hear them say these things, especially if you have pain and sorrow and your own story that's brushing up against his right there. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I had to sit with that tension, and that's what adoptive parents really, I just want to hug them all and say, like, just, I promise you it's okay if you just tolerate that tension and that discomfort and take a break if you need to. I really didn't have a ton that I said to him that night. I really just kind of repeated and talked back and kind of talked about the DNA piece and how God made and said our message again. But I circled back a few days later because honestly, if I'm really honest, it felt horrible to me to hear him say those things to me. I had too much of my own stuff I had to manage because it hurt. And I thought, I don't want to react to him out of hurt. So I waited several days and I actually talked to some of my safe people in my life, dear friends, and about the story. And through processing my pain, I thought, well, I need to kind of reclaim some of this. A lot of times my oldest can, you know, take something good and turn it into something not good. That's kind of a pattern for him at a birthday party, at whatever. Mm-hmm. So he's going to do that with his adoption too. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And I went to him and I said, you know, I've thought a lot about what you said to me about the whole 50% your mom, blah, 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 blah the other day. And I said, I just want you to know that you are like 11. Well, at that point he was 10, but I was like, you're 10 now. You're 10 years old. And you, I want you to know that you get to start thinking and about how you think and feel about your adoption. You get to start taking some ownership now about what do you really think about it? And what do you really feel about me as your mom? And do I feel like 50% your mom? Or when you think of me, do I feel all the way your mom? Mm-hmm. You know? And I watched his face. It almost makes me emotional. I watched his face. Mm-hmm. I watched his face soften and his shoulders kind of settle. And I think it was a relief, like, oh, wait, this abstract thing that feels so confusing and bad at times and is painful and hard, I get to start taking some ownership about that. And so if our only goal as parents is to protect our children, if that's the only goal, you're in a lot of trouble. You'll have very safe little people who aren't quite ready for the real world, but they'll be safe. But I that's part of my goal is to protect, but I really think probably honestly, my bigger goal for my own children is to empower them. And I think in that conversation with Jake, not only did it empower me, because I think I felt kind of like crap, honestly, after he'd said what he said, but it empowered me, but it really empowered Jake to take some ownership of his own story too. And I couldn't have had that conversation with him at 8 years old. I couldn't have had that conversation at 9. It was literally as he grows bit by bit, like y'all say, drip by drip, same thing with adoption as it interweaves with the birds and bees. Be ready, be patient. You're good enough to answer these things. Swing back in. Don't be afraid. It's like you need to be empowered too, because it's okay that this is broken. It's okay that it's messy because it's so incredibly beautiful. And y'all talk a lot about message and, you know, your own story. And if you really believe your message, you will love it. And the same is true. I believe it. I just resonated when I heard y'all talk about that in your training, because I think for especially new adoptive moms, there's so much pain still that's prickly and sharp, and they haven't maybe done enough of the grieving that over time kind of washes over that grief and softens those edges. And I'm a lot older now. And, but I just think it's a beautiful thing to let grief do its work and to trust that process and to hold the space. I just think the more you love your story and even the brokenness, like I love our story. I hate it sometimes, if that makes sense. I hate it because it's complex, but I love it. I would not have them any other way. I love our story. I love it. So it's sad and it's hard, but I love it.
And that, I think it's just so to hear your passion and excitement and obviously the immense amount of love, but also in your humanness, if that's the right word, human.
Love whatever. It. That's a great word.
But you're also a real person. And in that moment, you couldn't have answered him in that wonderful, beautiful way at 10 p.m. or 9 p.m., whenever it was when he was laying there next to you telling you.
That's right. That was a no, I was too moment. Emotional. And it's okay that I was emotional. I don't know how I couldn't have been.
But
right.
That's okay.
You couldn't have done it then.
It's so wise of you to say, to give yourself that grace and that space, you know, to say, okay, you know, answer him, love him, repeat snippets of, you know, sound bites, and then manage your own grief, manage your own emotions, and then come back in such a beautiful, reassuring way as a mom. You know, then you're able to step back into that conversation as the empowered parent you want to be. And just to hear how Jake responded to your words of softening and relief and love, you know, like that is how you want this conversation to go. And none of us are
you empowered him, right?
Yes.
It was, and I didn't know how that was going to go. I knew something in me knew I needed that. And I thought, I don't know what he'll do with this. Again, the separateness. He's separate from me, but I watched what he did with it. And I just kind of couldn't believe what he did with it. I could visibly see it.
Wow. And that you're now sharing that, you know, before maybe you were carrying the whole burden of it. And now you've said, I need to let you carry some of this. And
that's
let's
right.
work on this together.
Which
instead
I love
of
Mary
just
Flo, that's so wise. That's so wise. Because I do have a tendency to take on way too much, obviously. And it's like I was taking too much ownership for his story and his thoughts and his feelings. I can't, that's not mine. And it was very freeing for me too. Honestly.
I think he probably felt like she trusts me. I'm getting to be a big boy now. Like you're really letting me have my own thoughts about this, but you're there for me to process those thoughts with.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. And I think it opens us up to keep having more and more and more conversations, you know, mm-hmm. which is what I want all their lives.
That's what you want.
Keep growing. That's right.
That's right. Now I'm just going to ask, because we had a conversation earlier this week. So tell us how COLA is different. I'm just going to,
Cole is the most chill to the degree that Jake is passionate and, you know, like he's the best gift receiver because he bounces. He's so pumped and he's so, you know, expressive and so all those things. And he's also like, he's having his worst day ever or his best day ever. Cole is, we call him our little Gandhi. He just like walks around. He's almost six. You know, he's got his hands in his pockets. He's super chill. Like some kid threw a Frisbee at his face yesterday, really hard at close distance. And he just kind of stared them down in a very kind way. Like, what the heck were you thinking? kind of thing. So when adoption stuff comes up, since Jake was little, he had questions constantly in the glider even, you know, he would be like, what about this? And Cole, when I tell him literally anything, cause I do all the initiating about that, about anything about the birds and bees or his story, he kind of shrugs and kind of looks at me like, okay. And then he's like, so you want to talk about, he's very like right now, he would look at me and go, well, okay, like, let's talk about Larry Bird. He's like into like 80s basketball players from the 80s. Like that's kind of, he's like, okay, whatever. But to be fair, that's a whole other conversation. They had very different stories, mm-hmm. very different arrivals. Jake's had a more traumatic, I think, experience. Cole's was not. So again, adoption stories are also unique. And these humans are so unique, kind mm-hmm. of how God made them and who they came to be. So yeah, Cole is my chill one. Super chill.
Well, that's good. Good to have balance.
Exactly. That's right. That's right.
And one question I did want to ask is, I know so many people listening today are adoptive families and so many are not. So maybe they have friends or family that are adoptive parents. And what are some ways that those friends could be supportive to adoptive families?
That is such a beautiful question. And already anyone who's thinking like that is like, oh, it's already so loving just to even have that posture to want to love people well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're already off to the races with that because, you know, I could sit here and list, I could tell you very quick. It's like looking at a menu, you know, you can know very much what you don't want, but sometimes you don't know what you want. Like I can tell you a lot of things people have said to me or to people I care about. But like, I can think of a woman, I was standing with Jake and she looked at me and she said, well, is he yours or is he adopted? And I'm standing there with my child and I smiled and looked at her. And I said, well, he is mine and he's adopted. Mm-hmm, and it's like, mm-hmm. I want to kind of look at her and say things I probably shouldn't say on this podcast is what I wanted to do, but it's,
I want to punch you.
That's right. Well, that's a very kind way to say it, but yeah, I would have said something, but you know, or, you know, people, there's just little griefs everywhere all the time, whether even if you're at the pediatrician or a doctor and they're asking, you know, what's your family history here? Mm-hmm. It's just as an adoptive mom, there's just tiny, tiny, tiny mm-hmm. griefs everywhere. And also it's just so in your face. And, you know, I always say, well, my family, we don't have a history of this and Jake's adopted. And so biologically mm-hmm. there's da, 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 da. So it's like, there's, mm-hmm. it's always, and, you mm-hmm. know, in that mm-hmm. regard, but in terms of what should people do to be supportive, I'll just tell y'all one little tiny story and it sums it up. We were at the pool last summer and here Cole was five and swimming and doing his thing out in the pool. And I was sitting with a friend who was a fairly new friend and she didn't know our story. You know, she had no clue and nor why should she? And somehow we got to talking a little bit about a portion of it, which was just the years between the boys and all the failed adoptions. And she said, you know, I told her about the seven failed adoptions and her eyes flooded with tears. And she looked out at Cole and she looked back at me and she said, and she knows Cole very well. And her eyes flooded and she said, I'm so sorry. I don't know if this is okay for me to say, or if this would feel, I don't know how this will feel to you to hear it, but Cole is so seven babies wrapped in one.
Oh,
and I started to cry. It makes me teary still.
Yes.
Because I was like, I looked
yes,
at him and
he
said,
is.
He is. He totally mm-hmm. is. And mm. he totally is. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that's someone who heard my heart, really took it in, sat there with me and hadn't even walked through those years with me like so many of my precious family and friends have. And I just think that's it. It's just being with someone. Mm-hmm. Whatever that looks like, not trying, if you're uncomfortable and you're like, oh, but adoption is just so beautiful. Oh my gosh. Yes, it is. But you know, like anything, let's hold both. Let's mm-hmm. hold it all. And mm-hmm. just holding that space, like you want to do for your children. We can do the same for our friends, but it all requires tolerating our own tension that we bring to the party. So mm-hmm. if you can do that, then you're, you know, you're already just loving people so well. What a sweet question. I love it.
Well, I'm glad we got to ask that question. That was a great question, Megan, because I just know that there are a lot of friends that we have who have adopted children and in our family, of course. And it's just good to know that sitting with attention, being there, being attentive, listening well is what we need to do for really all of our friends, but especially in this situation. We need to ask good questions and listen well. But thank you so much, Megan, for bringing all this beauty and all this struggle. And I love something you said at the very beginning, too, when you were talking about how no adoption story doesn't come without grief, but no adoption story is not a beautiful story. Mm-hmm. So thank you for bringing us both of those sides to the story so we can see the full picture. We're just so grateful. We're grateful for your family and for your spending this time with us. And I think we've probably concluded we need to meet again. But
loved it. This was such a blast. I adore y'all. Thank you so much for having me. I just loved every minute.
Well, thank you so much. This, we could talk forever, and I think we should talk again. So thank you for sharing your story.
I can't wait. Let's do.
And sharing your wisdom. This was awesome.
Oh, thanks, y'all. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Megan.